You're listening to the Virginia Beef Council Hokey Pod, presented by Virginia's cattle farmers. Bring everyone back to the table and get cooking at beefitswhatsfordinner.com.
Newsom's going to try to run with it, and he's going nowhere! All the way, touchdown!
Hard, smart, tough. Is that this team or what?
Nothing but clean! Mountain air in front of him! 3, 2, 1, touchdown! Virginia Tech Hokies!
Now, let's get cooking for the week. With Tech Hall of Famer Mike Burnup and the voice of the Hokies, John Lazor, here's your host, Wes McElroy.
Welcome into Hokie Pod Episode 2, Week 3 of the college football season. Wes McElroy, along with John Lazor, the voice of the Hokies, and Virginia Tech Hall of Famer Mike Burnup coming up. John Lazor will sit down with tight end James Mitchell. We'll look back at last week, and we'll look ahead to this Saturday's game against the Furman Paladins. And with that, we welcome in these two fine gentlemen, Mr. Lazor, Mr. Burnup. How you guys doing?
I'm doing great, Wes. I just took a picture of Mikey right now because he's in a Bermuda shirt, and I want people to actually get a visual of what this podcast represents, and that is all that is Mike Burnup. So we're doing good.
Chilling and just ready for another big podcast.
It's the beauty of living in Virginia. You can still bust out those type of things the third week of September.
What do you mean? You can't do that in Richmond? Come on.
No, I'm just saying that's the beauty of Virginia. There's people across the country right now that are feeling the 50s. Hey, we were in Boston a couple weeks ago, and it was dipping down into the 50s.
We got all those regulations about when you can wear white and all those things. We don't follow that. We do what feels good.
We do whatever.
All right, guys, lots to imagine here, lots to talk about, lots to recap. Let's start with last week. Let's first start with you, Lays. How did you walk out of Lane Stadium on Saturday after Virginia Tech gets that win over Old Dominion? Not exactly impressive, but it was a win.
Yeah, I had a lot of mixed emotions. I think Hokie fans did in general. When we get done with the broadcast or the game portion of the broadcast, Mike and I always go straight down to Beamer Way, and we have to walk up to where the post-game area is, and that's where Mike interviews, of course, Justin Fuente and Bud Foster and the players. And generally, if that is an occurrence where the Hokies lose, it's very quiet when you're walking up Beamer Way. And when they win, it's a lot of hooting and hollering and, hey, what tailgate are you guys going to meet us at, and all those things. And it's obviously a celebratory mood. And it was interesting on Saturday because it was somewhat of a mix of that. And I think a lot of people were doing what we were doing, which was mentally taking inventory. Happy that you won. It certainly got a lot more dicey in the fourth quarter than you would have liked it to due to your lack of ball security. And that was first and foremost. But at the same time, you started going back through your mental recollections of the day and your inability to run the football and at times your inability to wrap up and tackle on situations or in situations where you were in position to do so and make much bigger plays. So I think ultimately I've gotten to the point where it was a win, absolutely, but it also is in the category of a missed opportunity to clean some things up and execute better and really have people feeling totally good about where this team is.
Mike, how about you? A couple of days removed from last Saturday, how do you feel about last week?
Well, I think everybody was kind of hoping for a statement game, a game that you just dominated in all three phases, and clearly we didn't see that. I think it was on the way to be that kind of game when the defense came out and played really, really well in the first half, I thought. You know, they gave up that field goal on the first possession, but then after that they kind of shut the door on them. And, you know, Old Dominion I think only had like 14, 15 plays in the whole first quarter. They just kind of dominated. And so you look at the numbers in the first half, it was 24 plays and they had 70 yards, I think it was, in the first half. So the defense was playing really, really well. And then you come out in the third quarter, you get a stop, you get the pass interference penalty, on the first series, which gave them another set of downs. But then the defense shut them down there and the offense went down the field and scored. So I think that was important to kind of set the tone for the second half. A nice 12-play drive that was, 93 yards, I think. So I thought that part was really, really good. And then it's 24-3. You're feeling pretty good about things. And then just, you know, the wheels kind of fell off. You know, they kind of got going, made some great strides in their running game. The tackling wasn't crisp. A few penalties. And I think it just got closer than you wanted it to. And that's exactly what Bobby Wilder felt like his best chance to win was to keep it close and in the fourth quarter and maybe have a chance to win it. So then you go back and you think about how big that kickoff return was by Wheatley after they scored, and it was getting really, really close to 24-17, and then he comes back and gets the kickoff return down 71 yards, and three plays later he hits Patterson. And then the defense kind of closed it out after that, stopping him on downs after the turnovers and whatnot. So, you know, you wish it would have been a little bit more impressive. It wasn't, but a win is a win. And you just try to take the good things from the game and move forward. But clearly, I mean, you got to run the ball better. You got to tackle better. It's kind of all the things we talked about in that first game.
Well, let me get to the run in a second, but you mentioned tackling there. And, Mike, you just said a phrase that you probably said about half a dozen times in the broadcast, another set of downs. You guys brought this up in the postgame show. Last year, there were so many times this team was out of position on defense. Saturday, they were in position. It was just either that they were over-aggressive or out of position, or, you know, they put themselves out of position because they were there to make plays. They just could not make them, and it kept Old Dominion on the field countless times.
Yeah, I think that's another instance, Wes, where you take a positive out of it, but also a little bit of a concern, and that's because, to your point, you did clean up a lot of the things in terms of recognition and fits and all of those things. Mike said it, and I echoed it in the post game. I thought Bud Foster called a tremendous game, particularly after that first series where they were getting hit with some speed sweeps and some things to the perimeter that they needed to adjust to. They did adjust to those things, and it was absolutely a swarming and physical defense in the second quarter. That continued into the second half, and in a lot of instances, you were able to get to the backfield, and you were crowding Stone Smart. You were making him uncomfortable from both sides. You were able to bring some guys from the secondary and have clean shots at him. You also got some pressure from your front four, but the concern lies in the fact that that was also similar to last year from that point forward in terms of maybe getting physically worn down a little bit due to your lack of size, due to your lack of physical maturation. And how does that manifest itself? It certainly does through the inability to get guys to the ground, tackling high, not being fundamentally sound in your tackling. So it's just those small things that give up big plays that gets you hurt. And it doesn't mean that you're all that far away. And that's the bright spot for this team, is because being in the right spot is a big percentage of the deal. And that's obviously a lot easier to fix, or a lot harder to fix, I should say, than some of the other things that the Hokies are dealing with. The lack of depth, though, and where you get beat up a little bit as the course of the game goes on, for me, continues to be a concern.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I just think that when you looked at the numbers and they only gave up those 70 yards in the first half and they gave up 254 in the second half, 49 snaps Old Dominion had in the second half of that game. And for whatever reason, the defense just didn't play well, couldn't get them on the ground. And, you know, if you're not under control, you're out of control, right? And seemed like time after time that they were out of control, just couldn't make the plays and whatnot. And then you start thinking, well, did they get tired? Did they get worn down? Yeah, they only played 24 plays in the first half, but 49 in the second, that's a bunch. Then you start thinking, you know, well, they are practicing in the morning. It's not nearly as hot in the morning as it is in the afternoon. So you wonder if that's got anything to do with it. You know, this is the first time they've gone to this plan, and clearly in the afternoon it's going to be more hot and humid, and you just think maybe that's a little bit of a factor in the thing. Who knows? But they got to clearly get better, and hopefully that will happen this week, because you look at it and three games down after Saturday, and boy, you got some ACC games coming up that'll be crucial. When you think about Duke, how big is that? And then you think about having to go on the road after that and play at Miami. Man, it's going to get tight and tough here soon, so you better get some things adjusted and fixed quickly, because if not, it's going to get out of hand, because I'm telling you, those last five, three of them on the road, are going to be really, really difficult.
And speaking of getting things fixed, we'll take a look at this week's opponent. But first, Mike, you brought up the other thing that you brought up, the run game. What's not there? Mike, let's stay with you. What are you not seeing that this team is just not running the ball better?
Well, I don't see a ton of holes. I see too much penetration from the defense. You know, it seems like on the snap of the ball, there's somebody in a white jersey or whatever, a different colored jersey in the backfield, somebody that's gotten penetration for whatever reason. I see that too often. It just doesn't seem like there's a lot of push at the line of scrimmage, which is concerning. Even Vance Vice, you know, he made some switches the other day at halftime. He took one player out, put another one in. You got some younger guys in there, and you hate to mention names because you don't really know how they graded out, but I just thought that he's going to have to continue to maybe experiment and get some guys in there, because if they're not getting the job done, it's a performance business, man. Find somebody else and see if they could do it. And that's not just for the offensive line. It's for the running backs as well, because McLeese, you know, he's a hard runner, and obviously they benched, you know, King because he put the ball on the ground and ball security is number one, so he's trying to teach him a lesson. And then you get McLeese, and he fumbles in the third quarter, fourth quarter, whatever it was, when he's trying to put the game away. So, you know, I know Coach is kind of upset about all that, sure, but you got to get more production out of it one way or another. And, you know, I think I think we'll see some more switching on the offensive line. I think Vance Vice is how many times have we heard him say, Lays, that, you know, we got to coach him up better. You know, Fu has said that. Coach Vice has said that. You know, I think there's a little bit of pressure on everybody to make sure that that running game gets going. But you're averaging less than 3 yards a carry. That ain't going to get it done, especially when you're playing these teams. Think about Boston College had a retooled defense, and Old Dominion wasn't like a juggernaut of defenders out there. And it's not going to be that way this week when you can dominate the line of scrimmage. Their defensive line is not very big at Furman. And so you better get it right, and you better get it right pretty quick because it's only going to get more difficult if you don't.
Yeah, without question. And I just wrote this down on our pregame script for our broadcast on Saturday. If you don't get that push and you don't have that success level in the run game this Saturday, then you're really going to be concerned because this is a Furman team that's firepower is clearly on the offensive side of the ball. And we'll get into that a little bit later here on Hokie Pod, but you should have a decided physical advantage regardless of who you have on that line. I think, Wes, some of it stems from a lack of continuity. We talk a lot, and Vance Vice does, about versatility and how he likes that about this line. And he's able to move guys, and he's able to shift guys to different position and account for guys that aren't there due to injury or for whatever reason. But at the same time, offensive lines are built on continuity and they're built on comfort level, and you just got to get to that point. I think at this point you're okay because you're not into that grinder section of your schedule just yet, but you're going to need to identify what's the best five or at least what's the best seven that are going to give you an opportunity to get that push. I look forward this week to seeing Keyshawn King get back into the mix and see what he's able to do, maybe off of learning from watching in the second half last week, of course taken out due to some ball security issues. We saw the burst from Tarius Wheatley, sure, in the kick return game. I think he can help things and open some things up for the run game through the screen game. And Wes, you know this, I've said this a million times, we had an expression in baseball, and it's called pitching backwards. And sometimes when you need to build confidence in your fastball and you have it in your secondary pitches, you can build confidence in your fastball by offering with your off-speed first and pitching backwards. And I think for the Hokies, that may be the key to unlocking the run game a bit, is clearly this is a confident passing offense and a confident vertical team. And it doesn't necessarily mean that you need to jam the football on first and second down. Maybe you can get yourselves through the air into some more ideal running situations where instead of taking shots, you can take some run opportunities to see if you can't build that confidence level. So if you're gathering all that information between Mike's response and mine, there certainly are a lot of issues that you're dealing with simultaneously.
And I wouldn't be surprised to see some more of Caleb Stewart and more of Wheatley. I just think it's getting to the point where if those guys aren't getting it done, then let's go to the next two and see what they can get done. And we saw a little bit more of Wheatley in practice this week. Hopefully he can hold up with the hamstring and not get hurt. And, you know, you look at Stewart's a little bigger body. So I think every spot is open, and I think you better start making some strides if you want to get more playing time, because it's going to get real serious after this week.
It's Hokie Pod Episode 2, Week 3 of College Football. Wes McElroy along with Virginia Tech Hall of Famer Mike Burnup and the voice of the Hokies, John Lazor. Let's transition, staying with offense, into something else that's not there, and that's a person. That's Damon Hazelton. How can he change? How does he change the defensive scheme against Virginia Tech? And what is missing there, guys?
Well, you're going to get sick of my baseball references very quickly, but much like a baseball order, he's your three-hitter. And when you take him out, that means you have to shuffle everybody around. And it doesn't mean that they can't be productive, but they're not in their ideal spots. And you've seen that with Virginia Tech offensively without Hazelton, because ideally you can line him up on one side, you can either move Trey Turner to the slot on the inside on that side, or you can put him on the other side, and you can really spread the secondary thin. And it also gives you so much more ability to be versatile with Tavion Robinson and Hezekiah Grimsley and even a Caleb Smith. You take him out and it shortens things in terms of where people are condensing on the field and the threat that they need to deal with, because those guys have been outstanding, but they're not the physical presence and the physical threat that Damon is. So clearly, because of his absence, Trey Turner has seen quite a bit more coverage, and I think that's why you're seeing the success level for Hezekiah Grimsley, Caleb Smith, and Robinson, because so much of the focal point has become Turner, whereas if you had Hazelton there, you'd still put a lot of attention to Trey Turner, but you'd have to pay a lot more attention to Damon Hazelton. So his absence is a big one. He's the biggest. He's the most physical receiver. I think he's also somewhat of the key to opening up some of the matchups for the tight ends, because you have to dispel some of that personnel to deal with Hazleton that right now you're able to use on the tight ends in a more physical matchup. So he affects everything in his absence right now, and Coach Fuente will never use the expression frustration. He got frustrated talking about his lack of using the term frustration, but you can sense it from him in terms of, we need to get this guy out there, and we thought we were going to be able to last week against Old Dominion, and for whatever reason, medically in the middle of the week, things went south on you.
I would say this, that the perception of Virginia Tech football right now is not great. Okay, so when you think about, you got guys that can't play, aren't available to play, you know, I think you feel a little bit of the heat. I mean, I think everybody wants to have a full deck of cards, right? I think you need Damon Hazleton to be able to play, and I'm sure it does get a little bit aggravating from the fact that you can't seem to keep him healthy. I mean, he was your best receiver last year, led the team. You know, he had whatever it was, 8 touchdowns and 5 straight ones, 5 weeks in a row to start the season. You know, he's got a touchdown in every game. The guy's a game changer, and you need to get him healthy one way or another. So if it means keeping him out for one more week because you got the off week next week, he needs to get healthy because he can make a difference in this team and stretching the defense and doing all the other things Lay said about keying on one guy or another guy. But I think in his absence, you know, Tavion has been certainly a bright spot. I think Hezzy's been great. The catch he made in the end zone was fantastic. You think about how Patterson has come along and Caleb Smith. I mean, they got some weapons there. There's tight ends between them have got 7 catches, so that's outstanding. And it was good to see him go a little more vertical, Ryan, last week. You know, he had 17 yards per reception is what he averaged on 16 completions. That's pretty good. And a lot of those he made on third down. So I was happy to see that part of him, and certainly should be able to have some success again here Saturday.
Moving on to Saturday, and that would be the Furman Paladins, and we will have coverage beginning at 10:30 across the network. Just past noon will be kickoff with John Lazor and Mike Burnup. And I heard you guys talking to Coach about this on TTL the other night. This is one of those games that most people look at and go, oh, okay, FCS opponent, tune-up game, get a win. But Laz, I thought you pointed out perfectly. This is an FCS opponent that, for multiple reasons, leaves you a little nervous.
Well, first of all, thanks for listening, Wes, and thanks for the kind words. We appreciate it, and so does Coach Fuente. No, I thought he was very forthright on TTL, as he always is when he seems to be talking to us, and we do appreciate that. No, absolutely not. You know, you look at FCS a lot of times, and you just say, oh, we're going to roll through those people. Fans around here certainly are aware of the success and the ability of a program like James Madison and what they've been able to do over the last handful of years and what they were able to do, unfortunately, here in Blacksburg back in 2012, and this is a team that may not be at the national level that JMU has been over the last few years, but they're certainly in the conversation. Coming off a SoCon title last year, coming off an FCS playoff appearance, they have gotten to become a very formidable opponent under head coach Clay Hendricks, who's essentially been a fixture there for a while, then went off to Air Force, grabbed some of those concepts, come back and married the two, and now they have quite a potent offensive attack. And you look at where they are, and what I mean by that is they'll run plenty of triple option, and they'll run out of plenty of triple option sets, but they also have the ability to throw the football over your head, and they also have a mobile quarterback. And I dove a little deeper into why in the heck Darren Granger is at Furman in the first place. And he actually went to a high school in a town called Conway, South Carolina, that's just off the coast from Myrtle Beach. I used to drive through it all the time on Highway 501 down there, and he was a very well-received and well-tooled receiver as a sophomore in high school. Unfortunately, he got into a car accident right about when that recruiting process ramps up, missed all of his junior season, recovered from his injuries. They converted him to quarterback. Nobody was on this kid. And he is a guy that Justin Fuente has told us, man, you'd love to have a guy like this because he's mobile, he's got a big and accurate arm, he's a redshirt freshman, but he's the FCS National Player of the Week. And he's a guy, Mike, that can hurt you along with the rest of this offense.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, mobile quarterbacks, we've seen that time and time in the past that have hurt Virginia Tech's defense for whatever reason. And he is one of those guys. I mean, he's a big kid at 6'4", and he can run, he can throw. You know, it's and they are better than what you think. I mean, they're ranked 13th, and Coach Fu talked about the fact that they lost by, 6 points to the team that went into Tennessee and Knoxville and beat Tennessee. So nothing to, you know, but concern for their how good they are. It's a team they've only turned the ball over one time. You know, you think about that, and the Hokies are sitting there at -6, right? They're really good on third down. They got good linebackers. Their kicker is unbelievable. He's outstanding. You know, they got good running backs. I mean, I think you look at this team, they're really potent offensively. Over 500 yards they put up in both games. And they're good in the red zone. They're 8-8, 8-for-8, all touchdowns in the red zone. So offensively, they're really good, and the defense is going to have their work cut out for them. And, of course, they got to get right quick. You know, you look at them on the other side of the ball, and they're not very big. They're not very big on either side in the trenches, where the Hokies should have the advantage offensively over their defensive line for sure. And they got some pretty good linebackers that can run, got a little size to them. But, you know, you look at the quarterback for Georgia State was, what, 29 of 37 and had 5 touchdown passes? I mean, that there's some opportunities going to be there Saturday, and you better take advantage of that. And so we'll see how it goes. But I think Clay Hendricks has done a really good job, takes a lot of pride in that since he played there and learned a lot at Air Force. And so these guys go back, him and Foo go back a ways just from their time when he was at TCU. So that should be fun in that regard, and hopefully we have a great crowd and the Hokies will get a lot of things right because I got a lot of room for improvement in all areas.
Wes, I'll add this real quick. In terms of the last time the Hokies saw the triple option, it was about one of the most deflating nights at Lane Stadium I can imagine that fans remember, because the Hokies were very passive in that game defensively. They'd gotten beaten up through the course of the previous couple of weeks, most noteworthy against Boston College, and Georgia Tech's offensive line just absolutely had their way in that game. It was just quarterback sweep after quarterback sweep, and it was surprising even with where this defense was from a physical perspective at that time. So I look for, even though, as Mike and I both pointed out, the strength of each team is the weakness of the other, and there could be some points and fireworks because of that, but I look for the Hokies defensively to remember that and come out a bit more aggressively like we saw them against Old Dominion. Then the execution, of course, becomes paramount in terms of your success rate.
If the daggone defense would just play for 60 minutes,
right?
You know, I mean, you think about how well they played in the third quarter at Boston College, and pretty much in the second half they gave up the one touchdown, and then the first half against Old Dominion, 24 plays and 70 yards, but then the second half again, 49 plays and over 250 yards. If they could just play for 60 minutes and get some guys on the ground, you know, I think Bud would be feeling a lot better and sleep a lot better probably.
And on that note, Mike, we talked a lot about the turnovers. It's the lack of forcing turnovers. And how are you guys seeing this? I'm curious from your vantage point. We're seeing in ways a defense that wants to be aggressive, sometimes overly aggressive. They're just not able to be aggressive enough in taking away the ball. What are you not seeing in that aspect?
Well, you got to break it down and you got to slice it up as to why you're not causing turnovers. And one of the ways that Justin Fuente and Bud Foster phrased it to the team this week was, we'll start bringing those turnovers into our column once we're in the right spots. And I think what he means by that, particularly in the secondary, is when you're forced to bring pressure outside of your front four, that means you're matched up in a lot of man coverage on the back end, where your primary responsibility is just covering your man, and you don't have safeties that are able to come over and ball hawk because they're up in the box and they're up in the backfield trying to make plays there. So I think that's a part of it in terms of the lack of interceptions to this point. In terms of causing fumbles, what is that? It's about being physical. It's about being proper at the point of attack. It's about being at the right level when you're hitting somebody, and the Hokies have not been able to execute that to this point. Some of turnovers is flukish, certainly, as we saw, like with the Ryan Willis fumble. But when you look at this matchup, again, particularly, Wes, as Mike said, Furman has only turned the ball over once, but they've also only forced one turnover themselves on the other side. So that turnover margin will be very interesting this Saturday as well.
And I think if you are more disciplined and all those stuff that, like, Lays is talking about, what we've talked about before, if the defense is more disciplined and more under control, they're going to get more free shots and get more physical and able to you know, have that other team be thinking, oh, boy, here they come again, or I don't want to get hit by that dude again because he lit me up. And so they haven't been very physical and dominating, and I think that's been part of the reason why they haven't. And Bud's, you know, he got a little more creative, but when he gets creative, you got to be able to get the guys on the ground, which we saw time after time they weren't able to do that. And then when they did have great pressure, there were, what, 2 pass interference calls in the secondary. So, you know, you got to kind of put it all together. And again, you're 1/4 of the way into the season in this game, and you got to get some things corrected and ironed out because – and again, I'd say the same thing, like offensively. If the guys that are in there aren't getting the job done, then give another guy a chance, because there was great competition, and especially at the linebacker spot. And I wouldn't be surprised if we didn't see some more of those guys in there this week.
Coming up, once again, a reminder that John Lazor will be sitting down with James Mitchell. We'll have that interview for you in just mere moments. We'll give you a full rundown of Saturday and where you can catch us. Let's spin this into a positive direction because we are 2 weeks in, and there have been a couple good first impressions. I'll start with you guys. When I say first impression, positive, popping off the field, who comes to mind? Lays, you first, and then Mike.
Yeah, it starts with Rayshard Ashby, and this defense goes as he goes. And all offseason we talked about a presumptive level of improvement from this team. And it was interesting when you mentioned Rayshard Ashby in that conversation because, of course, he took a lot on his shoulders last year and led this team in tackles despite missing a full game. So you look at where he is and the way he's able to command the defense and how physical he is in the backfield, primarily stopping the run. And I think he's taken those steps forward that you need to see. As Mike was just referring to in terms of the backer position alongside him, you're not necessarily sure if you're going to start cycling some reps in that spot. But Ashby right now has been the backbone of this defense, and I think he jumps off the film and jumps off the stat sheet to me, and that's absolutely something that this defense needed, and he has certainly provided.
Yeah, and I would think if the next guy on the defensive side for me would be Divine Diablo. I think he's just been solid, outstanding. I think he's second right now on the team in tackles, and just seems like he's that big physical presence that you need. A little bit like Cam Chancellor, but not quite. And he can deliver a blow. I mean, guys fear coming across the middle, and you see that dude waiting on you. So I think Divine has been a real positive spot and got to keep him healthy because moving forward, he's going to be big. And you know, Bud talked after the game the other day when he was down there lazy. He's talked about, you know, probably ought to play Tisdale and Artis a little bit more. And I think this week, I think you'll see those guys in there. Now, hopefully, it'll be the type of game where you can get a lot of second guys in there because you need to keep those guys fresh, get them some reps because you never know, you're a play away. But I think he was disappointed he didn't get Tisdale and Artis in there at linebacker just to get some reps for those guys after the game. I think we'll see them maybe a little bit earlier this week.
And I'll throw in a name that I heard you guys talk about a lot, and a guy who was way more active in week two. And Lays, you and I have talked about this, and this is a guy that you had on the radar, and that's Shamari Connor.
Without question, and as Mike discussed in terms of the level of creativity that Bud Foster showcased against Old Dominion, it was a confidence level in Shamari Connor to use him as that blitzer from the secondary. He did it three times by my count with Connor, and it was successful too. It should have been successful three, but Shamari is not a finished product just yet, Wes. He was undisciplined in one of those angles to the quarterback, but he's a guy that his teammates rave about because they say that he's fearless in terms of what assignments he takes on. He takes direct routes to the football, and you can absolutely see with his speed and athleticism why he leapt over the top of Khalil Ladler and is getting the majority of the snaps that he's getting at this point. I'll also add Jermaine Waller to that. I thought that he played at a much higher level in the second half against Boston College and then throughout that Old Dominion game. We didn't call his name much except when he was the blitzer and he was in the backfield and he was making tackles for loss. We didn't have to point him out in coverage much because he had good coverage. So you love where you are with Waller in terms of solidifying one side in terms of that quarterback tandem. Caleb Farley, I thought, played better as well outside of the PI penalties, one of which I thought was justified, the other of which I think they could have easily let go was pretty good coverage at the goal line. So, as you know, that's four or five guys that we've mentioned off the defense, none of which are on the defensive line at the moment. So you see where this team is in terms of the second two levels you're feeling pretty good about. And now, and hopefully next week when we do this segment, we'll identify some guys up front.
Yeah, I think when you look at the other guys on offense, I think Keyshawn King obviously has got some talent. I think he could be a difference maker. Maybe sitting him down last week will get him a little more motivated and more conscious of everything. And, you know, when you think about the receivers, great talent there. And those guys, you know, love to see Patterson coming along. But you got to get a little love. Got to give some love, guys, to Oscar Bradburn. Man, is he punting the ball well. Almost 50 yards a kick and just can flat out boom it. And he can switch a field like nobody else can.
Without question, would he have a 69-yarder? It was a touchback, so we dinged him some points for that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, he's been automatic. And we were talking about it on the broadcast, Mike, after one of those punts. He doesn't mind the pressure either when teams are coming after it, trying to block it, like Old Dominion did with 10 last week, or actually all 11, not
all
dropping
11.
A return man back.
Like,
he was completely unflustered and unfazed, and you love to see that. I'll throw in Doug Nestor, by the way. That's not something that's easy to do as a true freshman to jump in there at right guard and start in his second game, which he did. I thought he held his own.
And we're seeing a little bit more. I know we got to talk about Hezekiah Grimsley and that catch, and he's been the playmaker so far in terms of skill position players. But also, you guys have touched on the emergence. We're seeing more of Phil Patterson.
Yeah, I think he's just got a great future ahead, and he's got unbelievable speed. you know, his route discipline, it seems like it's gotten better. He gets a little more separation. So, yeah, I think he's a real bright spot as well. I think he's done a nice job, and that's a crowded room, man, and you better make a play when you get a chance. And I just think he's got a lot of talent.
Mike, I loved you in the post game where you were pulling the answer out of Hezekiah Grimsley. That was a catch. I know guys are supposed to be humble or try to be humble, but that you had to pull that out of him, because if you go back and watch that three or four times, you're still trying to figure out exactly how he made that catch.
Well, here's the thing that has not gotten a lot of attention about that catch, Wes, and that's this. And Hezzy really danced around this in the post game, and rightfully so, as a good teammate would. He said that Ryan Willis put the ball in a spot where he could make that play. In actuality, that ball was put in a spot where if he didn't reach up and flash that right hand like a frying pan, like I said he did, and knock it down, that ball was getting picked off. Because I went back and looked at the replay a number of times. There was a member, I think it was Boykin of the secondary, that was just waiting there with his arms out because he thought the ball was coming to him. So it was a phenomenal catch from a circus aspect and an athleticism aspect, and it was the reason it was number two on SportsCenter's top 10 plays on Saturday. But also, that was a big momentum-saving play, even if he had not made the catch, just to get his hand on it.
Yeah, that was a thing of beauty, man. It's like I told Foo the other night, being a quarterback. I said, you know, sometimes the quarterbacks make the receivers look good, and sometimes the receivers make the quarterback look good. And I thought that time, yeah, he definitely made Ryan look good, because that was a heck of a catch, good concentration. But come on, Hezzy, give me something. It wasn't that easy. You got to tell me about it. And he did a good job after that describing it a little bit.
Yeah, you just got to get him talking about other players, and he'll give you all you want in terms of hyperbole. He just doesn't like talking about himself, which is why we love him so much.
I just want to see him be able to return some punts.
Me too.
They got to figure out that situation, that rugby style, because somebody watches that film. I know somebody watches that film, they're going to be sitting there, why don't we do that all the time if you're not going to get a return? And 90% of the time, you're going to get a big roll out of it because of that, just the way the ball goes over and over and over. So, you know, it's either going to be something you got to give up. You either got to get him closer or put another guy up there short or do something to try to prevent that, because there was a lot of hidden yardage the Hokies gave up in that regard. And you want to get the ball in Hezzy's hands.
Guys, we've come to the point here where it's time to state the obvious. The Hokies need a win this weekend. But when I use the word desperately, what do the Hokies desperately need to do this weekend?
They desperately need to run the football. Going all the way back to the top of this edition of Hokie Pod, we discussed it, and I'll discuss it again because I think it's that important. This is a defensive front where if you are not able to get a push and you're not able to run the football, that is going to be a big red flag for this team going forward, and something that your future opponents are definitely going to key on in terms of trying to make you one-dimensional. Now, with that said, I do truly believe that the Hokies are going to be able to dominate off the offensive line this Saturday. I do believe they're going to run the football, and I do believe there'll be a dramatically different tone to this conversation next week. The problem with that, of course, is that might not necessarily mean you've solved all of your issues because of the lack of size on that Furman front, but this should be a good week to start building confidence in the run game. And if there was any mistake about what I mean, you absolutely have to do that this weekend.
Yeah, I think my number one thing would be kind of like right along those lines, and that's to dominate the line of scrimmage on both sides. You know, I think the Tech offensive line's got to get in there and be able to run the ball, and that's going to mean dominate those defensive guys. And the same way on the other side, you know, when you look at their offensive line for Furman, they're not the biggest dudes, and you got to get some penetration, and Bud will get creative, I'm sure, and try to bring pressure and make the quarterback uncomfortable. But that would be the number one thing. If you can control the line of scrimmage, I think good things will happen on both sides. So we'll see what happens in that regard, but they got to get more yards running the ball. That under 3 yards a carry ain't good enough, not in this day and time, running the football.
Coming up, we'll set up the entire broadcast Saturday for you, when and where you can catch us. But coming up next, John Lazor will sit down with Virginia Tech tight end James Mitchell after this.
Awaken the possibilities, build an identity, define a culture.
One-handed catch by Turner! Touchdown!
Let them know who we are, what we're here for. The time is now. Let's go. Experience Lane Stadium this fall. Tickets on sale now. Visit Hokiesports.com.
Hokie Pod continues as we prepare you for the Furman festivities this Saturday at Lane Stadium. We're joined by a very special guest, Virginia Tech tight end James Mitchell. And first of all, James, thanks so much for taking some time for us. We know that you have an interesting story in terms of arriving here at Tech and since you've been at Tech, and I was hoping you wouldn't mind if we went all the way back
and have you describe what it was like growing up in your household with your dad, who's a very, very unique person, and your mom, who might actually be the most athletically gifted person in the family.
So, yeah, back when I was a kid, growing up on Saturdays, I was always watch Virginia Tech play, sit in front of the TV, no matter what time it was, watching it with my dad. My dad grew up a Tech fan, so I kind of just followed his lead. And, you know, to be here, this was always kind of like a dream for me to come play here, originally under Coach Beamer, but then Coach Fuente came and offered me a great opportunity to come, and I really couldn't pass up on it. And on my mom, from my mom's side, that's what a lot of people say, that's where I got my athletic ability. She was Division I basketball player at Brown. She doesn't really like to brag about it much, but, you know, she stays on the humble side, and got a little bit from her too as well.
Well, you were not a slouch on the hardwood either. How do your basketball skills relate? We saw kind of an outbreak of that at the tight end position about 15 years ago, where a lot of people that had success in basketball, Mo Alie-Cox right now as well with the Indianapolis Colts, translates a little bit to football, doesn't it?
Most definitely. I'd say the two things that most translate for me are my vision. On basketball, I had pretty good court vision, and I think that helps me to see blocks and kind of see how things are going out on the field, and footwork. Be a basketball player, you gotta have pretty good footwork, and coming into college, that's one thing that I needed to work on, and that just only helped me.
Whenever anyone talks about this tight end room, they talk about how it's just a no-nonsense group. What is your take on the dynamic and the potential for that group?
Starting off with Dalton, you know, he sets a great example for us, a hard worker. But the good thing I love about this group is we know when to work, and we also know how to have fun. We know how to balance those two out, and it's really been a good group. For the potential of the group, I like it a lot because everybody we got can do a lot of different things. We're being spread out a lot more, and everybody's becoming more versatile.
You, as you mentioned in your first response there, are relatively local, having grown up in Southwest Virginia, and that's not something that a lot of your teammates can say. Give me the recruiting pitch for Big Stone Gap, Virginia, and what Friday Night Lights was like at Union High School.
It was awesome. I think we had the best fans in that area by far. People, there'll be nobody in town. We'd get police escorts through town. I mean, just the whole town would be shut down when we played at home. We had fans travel wherever we was playing. It was really a great experience, and it kind of reminds me of how Blacksburg is, how they come together for this team. That's kind of how it was for us at Union.
So I take it hasn't been that much of a cultural shift for you here in Blacksburg from what you were used to growing up.
Not too much. It's a little bit, Blacksburg's a little bigger, obviously, but as far as the main focus, it's pretty identical.
All right, let's take it off the field for a little bit. I mentioned your parents, and your dad, Jimmy, is just a beloved figure, quite frankly, where you're from. He's a pastor and served for so many years in that capacity at the Cave, but also did something that my father also did, which was prison ministry. What were your remembrances of him talking about that, some of the lives maybe that he was able to turn in the right direction?
It was countless number of stories, honestly. I probably couldn't tell you one specifically, but you know, he would go in early on Christmas and do Christmas messages for him. He might have done some Easter services for him. I mean, just taking a lot of his time to go out there and try to save those lives that are really almost already gone, trying to, you know, get them in the right place. And he was able to save a lot of lives, do baptism, stuff like that.
How do you think that may have helped shape you as a person, seeing some of those people that had gotten off the right tracks, as it were, but also learning the ins and outs of presentation with the group and how to interact with, obviously, different cultures and different people?
It helped me a lot. I'd say mostly, like, you know, doing the right things because, you know, him being there with in the prison, you know, he'd always tell me, like, what's going on and, you know, things I needed to stay clear of at a young age for, like, times now. And just being able to see that. That helped me a lot for right now. And, you know, he's a great speaker. Hopefully I can be half of what he is and maybe not do exactly what he did, but maybe do something like that, help change lives.
Does that help you interact with your teammates when you guys all go through the challenges that you go through, not just from a football perspective, but in your lives as student athletes and everybody obviously from very different backgrounds?
Yeah, most definitely I think it helped. You know, I'm not much vocal yet. I'm still working on that. But I know as I get older, those experiences that I had from my dad that he told me will only help me later down the line, help my teammates out and people I meet in the future.
Did you have any roles that we don't know about in the church? Were you the star singer in the choir or anything like that?
I wish I was. I was more just, you know, kind of the guy that helped out around, did the behind-the-scenes type stuff.
Now that you've become a big part of this offense week to week, you know, as you've taken on that ownership, you mentioned that you grew up a Virginia Tech fan. Your parents, I would imagine, are still big Virginia Tech fans. What's the game day experience like for them? Are they nervous? Are they loud? Are they here?
They come to every game. I think they've missed one game, even last year. When I wasn't playing as much, playing special teams, they came to every game. I really appreciate that support from them. My mom's probably more the nervous one. You know, she's a basketball player. So my dad, he's the loud one. So they balance it out.
Extrapolating a little bit on your family, you grew up with twin sisters. What was that experience like where there's two of them?
There wasn't really as much fights as people think. I think we got along for the most part. I was outnumbered in some things, and they were older, obviously, so they got the upper hand on some things. But also they'll say that I got babied a lot, so I guess it kind of goes both ways.
James, thank you so much for your time. Just a couple of more. We just walked off the practice field, and Justin Fuente said to you guys, you've only scratched the surface of what we can become. I know you guys feel that a little bit personally as well in your own games. Where do you see that? Where do you see this team being able to head this year, and where are the next levels for James Mitchell in terms of your personal ability?
As far as the team, I mean, I think there's a lot of things we can accomplish. We just got to do a better job of taking it practice by practice, week by week, you know, just focusing really at what's ahead. We got a lot of things we got to get cleaned up, but like the coach has been saying, when we're executing, we're doing things right, we look good on offense. As far as me, I just want to continue to get better every day and become more of a leader and just, you know, continue to help this offense out any way I can.
Last one for you. Last week was the first opportunity for a number of your young teammates who also played to play inside Lane Stadium, which is a magical experience. What was the best reaction you saw from one of those guys, or best story coming out in terms of their level of surprise or just kind of being overwhelmed by it?
I'm not for sure. I know Nick got in on offense, but he seemed pretty relaxed, which is impressive. I know he was excited because I think his brother was here who played here. But honestly, I don't know. I couldn't tell you.
Yeah, Big Eric was here talking about public speakers. He's one of the best. James, man, we appreciate it. We'll let you go. I know you're exhausted after practice today. Thanks so much for the time.
Thank you. Thank you.
James Mitchell from Big Stone Gap, Virginia. Huge part of the Hokies' plan this week against Furman. We'll install that game plan on the other side. Hokie Pod continues and concludes for Furman Week here in Blacksburg.
Awaken the possibilities. Build an identity. Define a culture.
One-handed catch by Turner. Touchdown.
Let them know who we are, what we're here for. The time is now. Let's go. Experience Lane Stadium this fall. Tickets on sale now. Visit Hokiesports.com.
That's the voice of the Hokies, John Lazor, sitting down with James Mitchell. And before we run down Saturday, Laze, as you sit back and you look and you listen to that, your biggest takeaway from that conversation was what?
Well, I love that James Mitchell, during the course of that conversation, said he hopes to be as good of a public speaker, or half the public speaker and half the guy that can influence people like his father, Jimmy, because he's already a great ambassador for Virginia Tech. He's so remarkably well-spoken, and that's been the case since he's been here. It's easy to see why in his upbringing and the family that he was raised in the area that he was raised in right here in Southwest Virginia. So he's a guy that I love to be around. He's extremely humble, and I think that his role in this offense is only going to continue to grow if it pertains to helping the push on this offensive line, the run game. I think he's capable of doing that. We certainly know that he's a mismatch for the defense and a problem in terms of catching the football. And I think as confidence in him grows throughout the season, we're going to continue to hear his name more and more. And I think he is an exceptional candidate to be a leader for this football team, if not a vocal leader. But I do want to add, we kind of glossed over his dad being a prison chaplain. My dad actually used to do that too when he was just coming out of seminary. That is not a small task, to try to go in and turn around lives of some people that have made some big mistakes. So kudos to Pastor Jimmy and his son James for the work that they do, and glad that they're Hokies.
Yeah, and they raised a great kid, and boy, does he have a bright future. You just look at him and you just think about the ways that they've used him, and think about Coach Fu. He was with us, what, at Hotel Roanoke down there, and just the first Hokie Club thing we had back in July, and just he was just raving about the spring that he had and how good he is. He's got big hands. He can catch the ball. The Old Dominion, you know, you think about Boston College, they had that screen Dalton Keene. They went to him like three or four times, and he got no yards out of it, basically. They ran one against it at Old Dominion, and he had that one catch for 20 yards, and almost scored on it. So, yeah, he's a matchup problem. I wouldn't be surprised if we didn't see him run the ball a little bit this week. We saw it in practice some where he comes around. He did it in the spring game. And, you know, he can be a wide receiver, a tight end. He doesn't mind blocking. He's just a heck of a kid and got a really, really bright future. Got to keep him healthy, and what a good compliment to Dalton Keene and Gallo as well, who's getting a little more playing time when Keene didn't get a lot in the second half. Got to keep him healthy.
We'll hopefully hear a lot about James Mitchell and hear from him on Saturday. Lays, give us the rundown of what's shaking down going into Saturday.
Well, second consecutive home weekend, so Dave Stipe will be a little bit later arriving here to Blacksburg, and that's a service to everybody throughout the course of the community. But no, it is nice to be home back-to-back weeks because you've got everything ready to roll from a tailgating perspective and a schedule perspective. Everyone was reminded what time you actually need to get up and get cranking for a noon kick. I will actually release Hokie Pod on Thursday. I said it was going to be Thursday last week, and then I surprise attacked people on Wednesday, now know how to upload it myself, which is a great thing, so I can actually control what time that goes up. So this will be live, and if you're listening to it, obviously that will already be the case. Wes and I successfully, from a technological standpoint, executed Hokie's walkthrough last Saturday. We expect to do that again. Get your questions into us. You can tweet them at either of us, at LaysVT for me. Wes, give your handle in just a second. We'll be live on the Virginia Tech Hokie Sports page on Facebook at 7:30 a.m. Mike and I, even though it is a bye week, will be joined by Justin Fuente on Monday night across town at McLean's at First and Main for Tech Talk Live, and hopefully we'll be talking about a much cleaner performance.
Don't forget Hokies walkthrough Saturday morning at 7:30, and my Twitter handle is at YoWest910TheFan, and we will talk to you at 10:30 on Saturday morning, and then these guys will be on the call just past noon across the network. Lays, Mike, thanks so much.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig, inspiring kid confidence.